Are you tripping? Ernesto Londoño was in 2018 when he participated in an ayahuasca ceremony in the jungles of Brazil. Not only did the experience seem to relieve his depression, it sent him on a journalistic journey to understand the rising use of psychedelics in formal and informal settings to address a range of mental and spiritual maladies. Ernesto is a national correspondent at the New York Times, and he joins us now to share five of his key insights.
Hello, my name is Ernesto Londoño. I'm a reporter at the New York Times and the author of Trippy, The Peril and Promise of Medicinal Psychedelics. I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from the book. Insight number one. The hype is outpacing the science. Over the past 5 years, there has been a surge of interest in the therapeutic potential of psychedelics. This was turbocharged by Michael Pollan's 2018 book, How to Change Your Mind, which tells the fascinating story of a promising field of medicine that was hastily abandoned in the 1970s at the dawn of the war on drugs. Since his book was published, the marketplace for medicinal psychedelics has exploded with a dizzying array of options. This includes everything from partaking in indigenous rituals in the Amazon rainforest, going to ketamine clinics in the United States, and even celebrity-endorsed luxurious retreats in Costa Rica that promise a miracle for a steep price. Now, there's no question in my mind that psychedelics can be transformative for many people. Clinical trials have shown they induce significant and long-lasting changes in brain activity and mood. But our understanding of the ideal settings and safeguards for these experiences remains limited. It's clear that for some people, these mind-bending sessions can be more destabilizing than healing. There's a lot we don't yet know about how to screen patients for these interventions, like what kind of support is ideal before and after a session, and crucially, what kind of people should refrain from taking psychedelics. These are questions that scientists have been investigating with a lot of interest, but their work is moving slowly, in large part because the fact that these compounds are illegal has made them very difficult to study. Insight number two. Psychedelic churches have become the most accessible entry point for this kind of therapy. Over the past few years, many underground psychedelic guides in the United States have stepped out of the shadows and begun operating openly after filling out paperwork to run a church. The reason for this? Congress and the courts have set a very high bar for the government to interfere in the religious affairs of Americans. Starting in the 1980s, the government began granting some exceptions to drug laws to allow the sacramental use of psychoactive substances. This includes peyote, which has long been used by members of the Native American Church, and ayahuasca, a tea from the Amazon that is used by a couple of Christian denominations that actually sued the DEA and won. The Supreme Court tackled this issue in 2006 with a unanimous ruling that validated the idea that these compounds can, in fact, be considered sacraments. That case has emboldened dozens of people to start new churches, and this has raised many thorny questions. Are some of these practitioners effectively practicing unlicensed medicine under the guise of spirituality? How do you tell the difference between a real church, a genuine church, and a retreat business masquerading as a spiritual community. And should the Drug Enforcement Administration have the authority to decide which groups are genuine churches and which are fraudulent? The courts are currently wrestling with some of these questions across the country. This is because some church leaders are the targets of law enforcement investigations. Others have decided to sue the government proactively, seeking explicit permission to import and administer psychedelics. Trippi puts a spotlight on one of these churches, which was founded by a woman in Austin who is a former crack addict and a stripper. Her four-day retreats often include veterans struggling with severe trauma and depression. Insight number three. Veterans are on the front lines of the psychedelic renaissance. The cast of characters trying to broaden access to psychedelics as medicine is incredibly diverse. They include respected clinicians, investors, liberal activists who oppose the war on drugs, and spiritual leaders. But a common thread is that nearly all of them have found ways to put veterans and their mental health challenges at the heart of their activism. The opening scene of my book features an Army veteran who signed up for a psychedelic retreat at a church in Texas a couple of weeks after he came close to putting a bullet through his brain. The final chapter takes readers behind the scenes on the first psychedelic clinical trial at a Veterans Affairs hospital. The growing number of veterans seeking these unconventional treatments has created strange bedfellows in politics. Some of the leading proponents for funding psychedelic research and expanding pathways for these treatments happen to be very conservative lawmakers. They, of course, have liberal allies who have long favored a more permissive approach to drug policy. Insight number four. Something really special happens when people embark on a healing journey in small groups. I have attended several psychedelic retreats starting in 2018, including a handful that are chronicled in Trippi. One of the things that has struck me time and time again is how quickly people bond during these intense experiences. After each psychedelic session, participants generally do a communal debrief the morning after. These tend to be deeply moving and powerful moments. People share some of their deepest, darkest secrets in front of perfect strangers. There are so many tears. There are so many hugs. It can be profoundly moving. There's something really cathartic about hearing echoes of your own demons in other people's stories. I think as wonderful and helpful as a good therapist can be, there's real value in creating more settings where people can process pain and trauma communally. Now, I understand group therapy won't be appealing to everyone, but it may be a way to make therapy more accessible, affordable, and effective for many people. This approach could also make a dent in our epidemic of loneliness. So many of the people I met on psychedelic retreats became dear friends. They're often the first I reach out to these days when I'm going through a difficult time. Insight number five. Speaking publicly about mental illness is scary, but it can also be enormously liberating. When I set out to write a book about psychedelics and mental health care, in which I disclose my own experience with depression, I had some worries. Would people see me as damaged goods? Might it close some professional doors? Ultimately, I decided these were risks I was willing to take. Here's why. When I've been in a dark place in the past, I've drawn so much strength from the stories of people who have shared about their own depression, their own suicidal ideation, and their own trauma. These stories have made me feel less alone. And crucially, they have given me hope. So on some level, I wanted to pay it forward. As I had more candid conversations about mental health while working on the book, with everyone from relatives to friends and perfect strangers, something unexpected happened. I started feeling increasingly unburdened. I actually encountered little judgment, and I found so much compassion. It deepened many of my relationships. And as I look back, I realize it's really made me feel less alone. I feel fortunate to have joined the conversation about mental health by writing this book. I really hope you will read it, and I hope you'll join me in speaking more openly about these difficult issues.
Thank you, Ernesto. That was 5 big ideas from Trippy, The Peril and Promise of Medicinal Psychedelics by Ernesto Londoño. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.